So again, good morning, and our workshop is going to be about helpful hints for heavenly homes. And we're going to be keying off on your first page the verse that says, "A wise woman builds her house, while a foolish woman tears hers down by her own efforts." Now, in the beginning, we're going to be talking mainly about principles, because all of us are coming from different situations. How many of you have children under 12? Okay, over 12. All right, how many of you are single parents?
Oh, wait.
Okay.
No, I'm not.
Okay. You're going to be so prepared. Great, that's very good. Well, because we're from different backgrounds and everything, we'll deal with principles first, and really more the traditional setting, which is father, mother, and kids. Then we're going to go into the working mom and the single parent, and then I'm just going to share with you some things that have worked in our house and some things that haven't worked very well in our house. And I do not come as an expert. I'm on the firing line because all of our children are still at home. And so one nice thing is you know pretty quick what will work and what will not work on those kind of situations. And so here we go. Well, there's two principles involved in this verse. One is you're either going to be building, or two, you're going to be tearing down. And what I found most women, we fall in two extremes when it comes to our houses. We're either the better homes and gardens type, you know, where everything is in its place and everybody sits around on cracked eggs, you know, but we just give our life to having our house perfect. The other extreme are the gals who couldn't care less, you know, and their house looks like a tornado that went through, and they're an archaeologist delight because behind them, you know, it's just their life. It just trails right along behind. So, but most of us hit right in the middle. And I, unfortunately, land on the side of the couldn't care less type. You know, I have a tendency to be very relaxed around our home. And it always bothered me about, you know, being perfect. And one day I read this thing that said the problem with trying to be perfect is you have the syndrome of all or nothing. It's either perfect and everything in place or nothing and you just give up. And that was beginning to be my problem, and I thought, boy, what do you do? And so in the book of Ruth, chapter 3, verse 11, there was a verse there that helped me very, very much. And the verse says, this is Boaz talking to Ruth, "For all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence." She wasn't perfect, but she was a woman of excellence. And I thought, now I could aim toward that. I could do the best I can. And that was what excellence is. And Proverbs 31:10 says, "An excellent wife who can find." So our goal is not perfection, but it's excellence. Now, there's certain things that are going to tear down a house. And we're going to touch on these principles. And I find this really more among younger wives that have not been helped and have not been taught just the basic principles of what a home is for. And for example, these are some attitudes. Now, you may not have these attitudes yourself, but if you're around some gals that do, these are some guidelines that you can look for. Number one, they hate housework because they don't know how to do it. These are gals who never grasp the total picture. In other words, you get isolated. Why mop the floor? Because I've got to do it tomorrow. Or here I am shopping again, getting depressed over the grocery prices, and I'll just have to shop again next week. And so you fall into the problem of it just being isolated incidents instead of the big picture of I mop the floor so that my floor will be clean. Well, my mother-in-law has a floor that you can eat off of. I do too. Ketchup, mustard, potato chips, you know, it's there. But we need the big picture of how to do it. Okay, the second one that gals run into that they hate housework is because they're slaves to it. And the number one problem here is procrastination. That's your key word, procrastination. And you get buried underneath what you fail to do. And it's because there's a lack of mental discipline, which is a lack of physical performance. It's, well, I can do it later, or there's really something else I'd rather be doing. And, you know, I like what God does. He doesn't say, Barbara, why don't you clean house like your mother, or like your mother-in-law, or like the neighbor next door? But he says in Proverbs 6:6, go to the ant, who having neither overseer or ruler, does what they're supposed to do at the right time. And so some of these principles in this one, later when you go home, see why God wants us to look at the ant in regards to just keeping our house. So another principle then on I hate housework because is number three, they resent the large amount of time it takes from other things they want to do. One of the problems I've had is because I have huge blocks of time, it's the old adage of work fills the time allotted to it. So if I have all day, sometimes I'll take all day. Instead of beginning to realize that homework is just small jobs that you do in order, and we're going to touch on this in just a little bit, so that I will have time to do the things I really want to do. Okay, another one is number four, they try to do it alone. They try to do it without their husband's help, without their kids' help. And the problem you run into with this is you begin to feel isolated. And you begin to feel used, taken for granted, and then your self-esteem goes down. And sometimes I'll fall into that. I think, boy, no one really wants to help. And I just think, boy, the house is all mine, all 3,000 square feet of it. And it's because I've gotten isolated. Come right in. Here's the notes for you. Okay, these are some of the things that tear down a house. So the obvious thing is I need to change my attitude. And one of the biggest things that's helped me is just perspective. These are some philosophy builders. Number one, how can I change my attitude? One, because God said to work. 2 Thessalonians 3:10, if you don't work, you don't eat. Number two, because it's there and it needs to be done. And this is called accepting responsibility. Let me add here, those of you who have children, anytime you begin to do for your child what they are capable of doing for themselves, you are creating an emotional cripple. So begin when they're very, very small. Teach them how to make their bed, how to put their toys up. And then as they get older, you will already have that built in. Because if you wait till they're teenagers, it's another song and dance. So if you will teach them very, very early to accept responsibility. And then number three, because it's physically good for you. Proverbs says, desire accomplished is sweet to the soul. Number four, because it blesses you spiritually. Number five, because it is emotionally beneficial. Now those are some philosophy builders of changing our attitude. Now on the next page, we have Ecclesiastes 9:10. Whatever your hand finds to do, verily do it with all your might. And I've written on the board, perhaps the most valuable of all education is the ability to make yourself do the thing you have to do when it ought to be done, whether you like it or not. One thing that I try to do is do the worst first. For example, check what bugs you the most. For some of us, we don't like unmade beds. For others of you, it may be you don't like dirty dishes. But find out what really bothers you and then do that first. For example, as soon as we're out of bed, we make it. It takes me 36 seconds. Why leave it for all day? Or maybe you don't like doing the dishes first. But whatever it is, do that first and get it out of the way, and then reward yourself. Oh, then I get to do what I'd like to do. For example, I don't let myself have my quiet time until I get all the breakfast dishes done. And then I can have my quiet time. And so I try to do them as fast as I can. Another thing is pace yourself. When you plan your day, take little breaks during it. And then another, and this is some homework, do a Bible study on Proverbs chapter 24, verses 30 through 34. And this is about the sluggard. This is the lazy person. I think one of the biggest problems sometimes we as wives have is you can get linked up with TV soap operas, or seeing if Aunt, Matilda won the $8,000 on the television program, and try to really eliminate those things that will keep you from doing what you're supposed to do. Okay, Roman numeral 2 is what builds up. Number 1 is situation control, which is preventative planning plus wise building. Now, what is situation control? Have you ever had someone ask you, what have you thought about all day, and you can't think of anything? Well, that can really happen at home. And so be aware that certain negative things can happen in any given situation. In other words, begin to plan ahead. And one of the negative things that we had in our home is we never could find enough hairbrushes. There's 7 of us. And we had about, 3 brushes. And every morning I could hear the drawers being opened, and where is the hairbrush? So finally I thought, why don't I just buy more brushes? And so I did, and then we threatened to tie a big rope to them, where they couldn't take them out of the bathroom. But have it in a certain situation. Have it in its given place. If you have a small child, think preventively. For example, let's say you have a 2-year-old. And you're going to serve them what's left of the chocolate, in the bowl that you've made a cake. If you take that bowl and put your 2-year-old in the high chair and then give it to them, and then suddenly realize you forgot their bib, you would never say, wait just a minute while I go in the other room to get the bib. Because you know what's going to happen when you get back. They're going to be covered with it without the bib. And what happens to a lot of us, we don't think through what could happen, and then I know I get upset because I had not done that. And on situation control, there's a chart on the next page which says situation, time of day, who was involved, what happened, the result, what could I have done to prevent it. Take a day and give at least 3 situations. Write it down, when it occurred, and who was involved. I can usually tell you at our home when are the most difficult hours. Right before supper, because the kids are hungry. It may be in the morning before school. Look, and sometimes you will find out that a certain person is involved in every situation. And just to give you examples, at our home, I found that in the mornings before school, if the kids don't lay the clothes out the night before, it's chaos. They can't find their socks. They can't find this, and they can't find that. And it just sets the whole house into turmoil. So situation planning is look ahead, get the clothes laid out the night before, and then you begin to eliminate a lot of the problems you have in your home. If all you're doing is correcting, then you're on the wrong frequency, and you need to get back to situation control. Then on number 3, you set up the situation to to prevent it happening over and over and over. And sometimes you just have to back up. And let me give you an example here. I found with my kids, I would tell them to do something, but it would take from here to here to get it done. And during that time, I would build up anger. And so finally, when I'd move, it was due because I would finally get angry enough. And I thought, now that is not going to work because I can't spend my lifetime getting mad at the kids. And so here was my problem. They were obeying my actions, not my voice. And I'll give you a classic that Howard Hendricks gave on this. He said one day he was playing in a sandbox with a little friend. And so the little friend's mother called. Johnny, time to come home. Johnny just sat there playing in the sand. And so Howie said, your mother called. Oh, I know. But he didn't move. A few more minutes, here it came again. Johnny, a little louder, come home. Johnny didn't move. Finally, the fifth time, and you could have heard it all over the block, you know, it sounded like an earthquake. Johnny, get home. Cool as a cucumber, Johnny said, well, got to go now. And put his things in his bucket, and he went home. Because he knew when his mother really meant it. And I thought, aha, I had misinterpreted. I thought when I really got with it, they obeyed. It wasn't that. They obeyed because they knew when I really meant it. So your kids are very astute of when you mean what you mean. And so on these situations, back up and say, okay, in 5 minutes, time to take your bath or whatever. Then in 5 minutes you go and you get them at that moment and you begin to train them to obey your voice and not your actions. Okay, again on preventative planning. Does each person in the family have his or her own territory? Now maybe your children share a room, but they need their own territory. Be sure they have a drawer or half of the room that's theirs. Your husband needs his own territory. Maybe a desk or just some area that he can really call his own. Does each family member respect the privacy of others? Does each avoid opening a closed bedroom door without first knocking? I heard Billy Graham say that he never went in his children's room without knocking first. Number four, do we avoid opening another's mail? Number five, do we avoid purposely listening to another's phone conversation? Is Christ the foundation for what we do in our home? Does the family attend church together? Is the Bible our family guidebook? Do we each have the freedom to be ourselves and to develop our own personality, hobbies, and interests? Does each have the freedom to fail? This is very important, I think, for our children, for us, and for our husbands. We've had several D's this past report card era, and I've really appreciated the kids' attitudes. They were just crushed, and we told them, listen, we are more concerned that you do your best and we'll help you than for you to feel like you can't fail. Then do we avoid expecting perfection from anyone else? Does our home offer emotional security for every family member? Is our home peaceful with a lack of quarreling, tension, or hostility? And we set the atmosphere of the home, the wife does, not the husband. That's our bailiwick. Do family members have the freedom to use our home for spontaneous entertainment, are for personal things they want to do? Are outsiders comfortable and relaxed in our home? Do we laugh a lot? Do we like each other? Do we have fun together? Okay, how do I establish priorities? Do first things first. Have a set time to do things and try not to vary. Now, I know that sounds awfully legalistic, and these are just some practical helps. But habits die very, very hard. So when you're beginning to do your housework, have a set thing that you do first and go right through. And then it takes 28 days to make a habit. For example, if you see paper on the floor, if you'll pick it up and do that every time, in 28 days you'll find that you can't pass it without picking it up. So begin to create some good habits. Number two, perform on this principle. If you cannot do everything, do the obvious first. For example, a dirty bathroom looks a lot worse than an unvacuumed floor. Number three, learn to do things one thing at a time and pace yourself as you work. For example, instead of going into the bedroom and saying, I've got this whole bedroom to do, think, I will do the dresser first, and I'm going to do it in 36 seconds. Or I'll dust the lamps first. But compartmentalize what you're doing, and it'll make things go a lot faster. Avoid telephone temptations. You might want to write this down. I will never let the telephone interfere with my work. I will never use it when I have other things to do. And the reason for this is that you're establishing priorities. And so sometimes when my friends call, I'll say, I can't talk right now, but I'll chat with you later this afternoon, and not get tangled up with the telephone. Okay, on the next page, you can just read through these, because these are practical things for you to do on weekly, monthly, and quarterly cleaning. And then on the next page is the suggested daily cleaning schedule that will help you get through your home. And now let's turn, let's see what pages it is on your, turn to page 7. Doing all the work in the home is not your job. Seeing that it gets done is. Now, some of you have smaller children, and you'll see a chart on page 8 that's very, very helpful. And that's where your children have daily responsibilities. And when they do them, then they just check what you've had them to do. Now, one thing I found that helps with teenagers is that mine resented when I would say, okay, empty the trash, and when you get done with that, come back and I'll tell you what to do next. Okay, now you can go do so-and-so. Teenagers prefer this method. Let's say you've got 6 things for them to do. Write it out on a 3x5 card and put it in a little slot. Then they will come and read what they have to do, and then you may put on there when you want it to be completed, say by certain time. Then they can take that, and then when they finish, they put it in a completed job. Because Craig would say, Mom, I would like to know what you want me to do so I can plan on it, because I have other things that I would like to do. This helped eliminate a lot of emotional problems around the house. Now, Douglas does just the opposite. He will see what he has to do when it has to be done, and then he'll work backwards from the last minute that he has to start. Then he'll go and work from there. But what you're building into their lives is job and job responsibility. Then another thing that's helped us, if you can take the emotional out of doing responsibilities in the home. For example, if they say, well, I don't like to do the dishes. You can say, well, it's not a matter of liking it. Let's do it and get it done. And try to not have power struggles over emotional just jobs that you do in the home, but just have them do it as responsibilities. Okay, when we go somewhere, each person who is old enough is responsible for the following: getting his or her things together beforehand and being ready on time. Number two, when going somewhere, no person is allowed to be late because of his lack of responsibility to prepare ahead. This sets the standard, which means we leave or else without tears, anger, or frantic activity. We will allow for mistakes, but not for consistently poor performance. And then in bedtime, and here again, this is for you gals who have smaller children. I was reading an article, one of the main problems that children have today is they can't go to sleep at night. And they did a study on why is this a problem, and they think it's mainly because of overstimulation. A lot of kids get up early, they have TV, they have, you know, they go to nursery school, and they have all these things bombarding them. Another problem is that when dad gets home, let's say he gets home late, then he hasn't seen them all day, and he's excited about seeing them, and so he comes in, and the kids get excited, and, you know, and then they're bouncing off the wall, and then it's time to go to bed. And so you run into the problem of how to have a quiet getting to bed. And so one thing that seems to be working is that if you can have a routine for them, and even with older teenagers, I found that this is helpful. Have a set bedtime, and let's say you have bath, story, and then prayer. And prayer is super important with your kids. In the guidepost this month, there was a mother who said that she couldn't get her four-year-old to go to bed at night. And there was always this last-minute fight. And she thought, now, when I went to bed, when I was small, I didn't have that problem. Why? And so she thought back on it, and it was because her mother prayed with her. And she thought, well, I'll try that. So she went into Susie's room, and she said, Susie, we're going to pray together tonight. And Susie said, all right. And so they had a quiet time of just praying. And she said her daughter, for the first time, was able to go to sleep and have a quiet bedtime. Do you know the last words that Jesus spoke when he was here on earth? Father, into thy hand I commend my spirit. I didn't know this, but in Psalms, this was a good night prayer that every Jewish mother taught her child to say as a good night prayer at night. And so Jesus said that every night when he was a baby and growing up. And so his last words on earth was the bedtime prayer that he had learned. Okay, meals. Avoid rushing. Have everything on the table before the meal is called. Add special touches to vary the mood. If children are helping, don't rush them. Control mealtime conversation. I found in our home that mealtimes are very, very important, and especially to keep them where they're not controversial and where they're not tension building. And it's a super time to get time with the kids. And what we do, since I have five, it worked out real well. Monday is a certain day for one, Tuesday another, Wednesday and so forth. And that way I get personal time with each one. And we do things together. And I found when you're working with kids, a lot of times they'll talk to you when they don't have to look at you. But when they're doing things with their hands, and so as they're setting the table or washing the dishes, we get a lot of talk time in. And then you have a chart, and it might be fun if your kids are older to have them fill that out just to check your mealtime. Okay, now we're going into an entirely different section on working mothers. And these are some positive and negative results. Most of my friends work. And one of the facts that you have to face as a working mom is that your domestic demands do not stop when you go off to work. They're still there when you get home. Another negative is that the outside employment supplements the family income, but it also takes away from it. There are expenses, your clothes, makeup, and things like this. Your job is an additional responsibility. There are physical and emotional realities connected with the job, and the problems you face at work also affect you at home. If you're a teacher, you realize that the problem of maybe one of the kids isn't having something to eat, and so you worry about that. Or maybe you're a nurse and you run into the problem of, you know, the cancer patient. But a lot of these things you carry home with you, and it makes it more difficult. And I did work 1 year with all the children, and I found the first thing to go was my emotional reserve. And when I came home, I had very little left over. And I realized that that was really a problem, and that I needed to be sure that I had just some personal time to build up to some emotional reserve for the kids. Once you take a job, it's easy to get locked into and become dependent on your portion of the income. Another negative is the demands of your job may conflict with the demands at home. Number 7, the most difficult situation to cope with as a working mother is deciding what to do with the children. Now, there are some positive aspects of working. One, it is preparation for widowhood or for being a single mom. Number 2, it is stimulating. Your mind is thinking and you have job responsibilities. Another is individual identity. Number 4, although there are extra expenses, you do make extra money. And number 5, children will gradually detach from your apron strings. Okay, I know some of that is just some of the negative and positive that you have to think through. Turn with me now to page 11. And we're going to talk about a role model. For a long time, I did not like the lady in Proverbs 31. I felt she was a threat. Ooh. I felt like, boy, if I'm supposed to be like her, I'm lost. I just could never live up to that lady. And then one day I realized that, no, she was a role model of what we're supposed to shoot for. And so she no longer became a threat to me, but someone I could use as a guide. Now, what am I going to do and where do I begin? Well, you start by letting God begin with you. In Proverbs 16:2, it says, "All the ways of a woman are clean in her own eyes, but the Lord weighs the motives." And I think one of the things as homemakers and wives and husbands is that we have to sit down and ask the Lord, what are our blind spots? What is it that I'm doing wrong? And maybe a friend could help. And the Lord is very gracious because he also gives the positive as well as the negative. Now, there's certain things that decrease ourselves at home. One, and this is just on the negative, but am I a grouch, a nag, a complainer? Am I short-tempered, impatient, and negative? Number 2, do I use God to nag my family? Number 3, do I center reactions around myself? Let's say Jack is late getting home. Well, am I more concerned that my pot roast is burned or that he's late? Am I a good sport? One thing when you have teenagers, you've got to have the skin of a crocodile because they will really test you. And I shall never forget one day Craig came in. He's our 17-year-old. And so Jack had really a hard day. And so he was sitting there kind of slumped. And so Craig came in and he said, "Well, hi, Dad. Rough day today. Can't take the pressure?" And Jack said, you know, it really, you can't fake with your kids what's really going on. Now, you can fool adults across the board, but kids really know what's going on. And I asked Craig one time, what's the main complaint that teenagers have against their parents? And he said, it's parents who won't admit they're wrong. It's parents who will never say, "That's right, I blew it, and I'm sorry." And I thought, you know, one of the things I want to do as a parent is when I goof, I go back and say, "Hey, I'm really sorry. Will you forgive me?" And then, is my devotional time changing me? Now, there's some things that we can do that will build and increase And if you don't remember anything else, remember this one. Be kind. Jill Bristow was giving a talk once, and she said her daughter was going through just a terrible teenage stage. And she was so hard to be around. And so Jill said, "Lord, what can I do, you know, before I shake her teeth all out?" And the Lord said, "Jill, be kind." And oh, she said, "I didn't want to be kind to her or my husband or anybody else." But she said, "Okay, Lord, I'll give it a try." So she was. She was just kind. And so after about a year and a half, she noticed that her daughter was different. And so one day she said, "I've noticed that you're back to your old self. What changed you?" And she said, "Oh, Mother, it's just because you were so kind." And kindness really, really works. And you know, your kids really need to be encouraged. Your husband needs to be encouraged. We need to be encouraged. But one day I noticed Craig, well, it's about after a week or two, he was always bragging about himself. "I'm so good looking. I'm so great. I'm so," you know, he went on and on and on. And I thought, should I say something? And the Lord said, "No, just kind of wait a little bit." So I did. And so finally one day he said, "Mom, do you know why I brag about myself all the time?" And I said, "No, why?" He said, "Because it's so hard at school that if I don't say some positive things about myself, I would get so down." And it gave me a little red flag that I need to be very careful to encourage my kids, to encourage my husband. And these are red flags that you can look for. Number two is just be available. Now, when your kids are little, they're pretty much available on your time. But when they get older, you're available on their time. And I found that I got more done on Craig's paper route than any other time. He played basketball, so he would run home, fold his papers, jump in the car, and we'd go throw papers. Well, he knew that every day he had that 15 minutes with me. And so he got his entire sex education on those 15-minute runs. And girls and anything else, because that's when he could talk to Mom. And so we need to have special times with them that they can count on. Now, kids know you're busy. But what they want to know is what you do when you do have the time. Let's say you're a dad and you've got 10 minutes. You can say, "Billy, I've only got 10 minutes, but I can't think of anything I'd rather do than spend it with you." And your kid says, "Great." And you go with them and you have that special time. And really, with husband, family, and in your home, you will teach more on just your relationship, your attitude and your example, and your time with them. And what you do in the first 12 years will basically determine what you do in the last 12. And you cannot shred relationships the first 12 years and expect to build them in the last 12. So the important thing is getting time with them. Okay, do I listen well? Or am I always quick to tell them what I think? Do I pray for them? Do you know what's going on in their lives? Proverbs 27:23 says, "Look well to the way of your herds and know the condition of your flock." Do you know what's bugging your husband? Do you know what's bothering your kids? If you don't know, pray. Or in conversations, begin to ask them. And one of the things you might ask the Lord to give you is in Isaiah chapter 11, verse 2 and 3. But he's talking about there. He says, "And he will not judge by what his eyes see, nor make a decision by what his ears hear." But you go up to the verse ahead and it says, "The spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord." Ask the Lord to give you a sixth sense. Have you ever heard this expression, something just kind of smells fishy? Ask the Lord to give you just an insight to what's really going on with your children. and with your husband. And the Lord will do that. And then you can begin to pray for them. Then say thank you for what they do. Mine have told me, Mom, you always notice what we miss. Don't you ever notice what we do right? And I thought, ooh, I sure need to be careful about that. Then write these questions down just to ask yourself. In what areas do I perform well? In what areas do I perform well? And then, in what areas do I perform poorly? And what can I do to improve? To build a house takes calculation, contracts, and concrete. To build a home takes courage, character, and Christ. To build a house takes calculation, contracts, and concrete. To build a home takes courage, character, and Christ. So this is basically our outline. Much of this I was helped by Mrs. Jo Berry, and she has written a book called The Happy Home Handbook, and all the good things you heard were from her, and all the mistakes were mine. So this is sort of, it's really just an outline to go back home and look over. Now, I know with this many in the room, there's some questions, and I also know probably we can learn from one another. What are some questions that you all have as far as how to make a heavenly home? Do you all have some questions? It's not here, and you might try at your local bookstores. It was published by Fleming Revel Company in 1976. Yes. Does not want to wear what you want them to. Okay, I've got some ideas on that, but do you all have some? Yes. Just like that. Well, four-year-olds are notorious for that, if that will encourage you. Yes, four-year-olds are out of bounds. They test all the boundaries. And I think your suggestion was excellent. they can wear what they want to school within reason, and then for Sunday they wear what you want to do. I think maybe one other step is, and because you know they do that, you don't reward bad behavior. And what I mean by that is, because when I've gone through it, and it's with Janine, I realized that Sunday mornings were becoming a battleground. And I was contributing to, well, first I tried to pacify it, you know, and make peace, anything to keep it from getting to be a mess. And it was getting more and more drawn out because I forgot she had quite a reservoir to draw from. And so my husband said, you're rewarding bad behavior. So what we have done, and it's worked, is we lay it out the night before, even if it's something she doesn't want to wear. Then, if we, the minute she starts to complain, we spank her. And we say, I do not want you to have a bad behavior. You must obey Mommy. And that really cured it, because she learned that she had to respect what Mom and Dad said. And I think what's involved here is that if we're helpful for them and let, you know, give them certain boundaries, but then that they know that there's certain things that we expect. And that has helped. And Janine's attitude has completely changed. Instead of being a grump on Sunday mornings, she knew she wasn't going to get away with it. She puts it on, and we go to church.